This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In 2020, local environmental journalism portal, makaranga.org, published four very in-depth articles based on their investigation into forest use changes here in Peninsular Malaysia. So the series was called Forest Files, and it explored issues such as forest use policies, key drivers of forest loss, and also how, quite importantly, citizens could influence forest use. So today in our third and final interview covering the findings from the Forest Files series, we're going to look at what more can be done to improve forest use in line with the needs of all the different stakeholders involved. So joining me to do that are Balu Perumal, who is the head of conservation at the Malaysian Nature Society, Surin Suksuan, who is the Southeast Asia Regional Director at ProForest, and Lau Yau Hua, who is the co-founder, co-editor and writer at makaranga.org. So welcome to the show, gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining me today. And just getting straight to it, you know, our national forestry policy makes it very clear that the country wants to manage forest reserves in a way that maximizes social, economic and environmental benefits for national interests. And this, of course, is in line with the principles of sustainable management. So based on this, if let's say you were a teacher evaluating our country's performance, what would your grade be?
That's a tough one. I think that at best average. I'm tempted to say below average.
Below average compared to our peers in the region, or?
Whoa, okay. So I'm just saying in terms of expectations, I think. So not comparing with other countries in the region. I think we are talking about the average Malaysian perception of how the country is managing our forest resources, then I would say it's below average. If you compare it region to the region, it might be different, you know. But I think we shouldn't be comparing in that way. I think we should set our own benchmarks, yeah.
All right, if it's below average, then that means we have a lot to talk about, you know, in this show, because you're going to be talking about solutions and you know, space for improvement. So What about you, Balu? How would you grade our country's performance when it comes to forest management?
I would like to say it's average. Average meaning that, you know, we are doing so and so, we have the policy, we follow the policy, and we implement it. So it's nothing great about that. If you look at like what Surin was saying, is I think they need to show more proactive, something new, something catchy, catching the imagination of the people, as well as, you know, putting themselves out front there, leading the conservation agent. I think that would be something that we will be looking forward lah. But as part of, you know, doing a job and so, keeping up with the law, the policy, I think is just average lah.
Okay, so not looking so good, below average and average so far. So obviously we've got to discuss things where we have failed. But before we get into that, I mean, what would you say we've done well then in terms of sustainable forestry?
Yeah, if I may first clarify a little bit about what I was saying earlier. I mean, we're talking about, my reaction was based on our performance currently. I mean, if you take a historical perspective, actually we did well in the beginning, you know, to be able to reach almost developed status with almost 50% or 50%, depending on the statistics that you look at, of our forest intact. That's quite commendable. But I think in the last few years, the performance have dropped significantly. So that is the key thing. So it kind of ties up with that, right? What we have done well, right? I mean, I think that there are not many countries that have reached this stage of development with still a considerable amount of our forest intact. If you look at most developed countries worldwide, and of course, most of the developed countries are in Europe, the Northern Hemisphere. I think the best performers may be having something like 30% of their forests still, 30% of their land under forest cover. And even then, a lot of those remaining forests may actually be plantation forests rather than natural forests. Right? They've got very little natural forests left. So in that respect, yes, we have done well. But I guess we'll go to the negative side later, right? So I'm just focusing on what we have done well. I think that we have tried to achieve that balance, and we still do have a lot of really valuable resources in tech forests that we should maintain in the long term. And even in terms of the areas that are under legal protection, we have seen an increase over the years. It currently stands at about 16% or so out of our total land area. But it also means that there's still some ways to go, right? Because if we have something like 50% forest cover, we have 16 under protection, or people might call it total protection, there's still about 34% that we can improve in terms of its protection.
Yeah, well, just to put a more exact figure on the forest land, it's for the whole of Malaysia, it's now 54%, according to the statistics from the Forestry Department for 2019. It's, you know, much lower for Peninsula Malaysia at about 43 or 44%, but for the whole of Malaysia, it's about 54%. So yeah, Balu, so what would you say we have done well?
I will concur to Surin's view just now. I think what we may not have done well would be our management of forests used to be directed by clear research, you know, and clear policy direction, right? But towards late, we understand that there's not much of our management is directed by research. Okay, you know, so that to a level where, you know, when we say there is an endemic species there, people will start asking us questions, you know. So because they don't do research, so it's just like the political. They are changing all our discussion into a political arena. So that is quite bad. And the other thing that we also found out that a lot of decisions to convert or to protect forests are not by scientific measures or from data that we actually get. So what I'm saying is we have done well previously. We actually have led the world of tropical rainforest conservation and also management through research. You know, Malaysian research produced by Forest Research Institute is top-notch. Okay, at one point, we also lead the IUFRO, the union of all the forest research institutes in the world. We are no more there. So we have lost out to a lot of other countries, especially our neighboring countries like Indonesia, Thailand. You know, Thailand have a history now of like 30 years plus on conservation. No, they don't do, they have a moratorium of logging, you know. So we are not into it yet, you know. We have it in Selangor, but no moratorium on logging, but there's a lot of conversion happening, all right? So this is where our policy at the federal level and the policy at the state level, it doesn't match. It doesn't match, and then we are finding a lot of difficulties to actually ask for the state to comply with our national policy. So we have a very good document. We have management planning for almost all of our forest reserve areas. I think maybe City from MTC would have told this, right? So we have very good planning, but it goes to implementation. Nobody can control the decision made by the state government. All right, so we have a disjunct there, okay? And most of the most annoying thing is most of the development in the state are done by the state link agencies themselves. So this is also something of, it's all quite recent trend, you know? So these are a bit worrying. I think we have lost our lead in many ways in terms of research and also policy decision making, all right? So we have to go back to that. I think the government are not being very transparent on what's happening, especially at the state or local level. You know, we only know there's a logging happening when you see the signboard or you see the lorries are already taking out the timbers. We need to know beforehand, all right? So I think we have to be very transparent. We have to bring in the participation of the rakyat in the resource decision making. How are we going to use our natural resources? Because at the moment, I think the industries have more say compared to the rakyat.
Well, okay. When I spoke to the industry, I think they disagree. I think they also tell me that they feel very powerless.
Really?
In negotiating or trying to advise the government on what to do. They also say, I mean, they also, you know, give the same kind of opinion that it has become very, I guess, political. But Balu was saying that, you know, the conversion now is not, you know, based on scientific decisions, you know, not based on data, and that it's not transparent enough. I just wonder, was there ever a time like that it was, the conversion was actually based on concrete data, decisions were made on concrete data? You know, when we talk about sustainable, right, it's that environment, social and economy, right? So was there ever a time in our country where we could say that, because both of you kept saying that, well, we want to go back, or at least Balu was saying we want to go back.
That's right.
So I was wondering, well, was there ever a time that we can, you know, look back and say, oh, that was like really the way to do it, and now we should go back to that? And transparency, I'm not sure, like...
Yeah, okay. I think we need to be clear what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Right? When we say that we had a good track record previously compared to now, and you know, what is not so good right now. So what Balu was saying is that we were at the forefront of research. I agree.
Yeah.
We were at the forefront of policy, international policy. I would agree. In fact, you know, the creation of the Forest Stewardship Council to certify forest products, for example, pretty much also had something to do with Malaysia's role in the CBD and the 1992 Rio Conference, because we demanded that if the developed countries want us to protect our forests, then we must see real benefits coming out from them. And forest certification was one of the key things that came out because of the demands from the developing country to see some tangible reasons to protect their forests. But you're right. I mean, in terms of transparency, we don't have a long history of transparency. And maybe in the past, it wasn't such a major issue because we did have a government that was, by and large, effective and able to put across the argument strongly at international fora and all that. And also, at that time, forest conversion wasn't such a major issue because we were at a different stage of development. But now, when we have an ever-increasing population, the forest area is dwindling, and also the times have changed. So people are demanding to have a better stronger participation in how our forests are managed. And therefore, I think there should be an adequate response to that. I think that is the part that where we have stagnated in terms of forest management, because the management response have not kept up with the changing world in terms of expectations and all that. So I hope, you know, I have managed to give a better context there.
Definitely, Surin. Lots of context there for sure. I'm speaking today to Surin Suksawan, the Southeast Asia Regional Director at ProForest, Balu Perumal, who is the Head of Conservation at the Malaysian Nature Society, or MNS, and Lau Yau Hua, who is the co-founder, co-editor, and also a writer at makaranga.org. And we're discussing, the series Forest Files, which Makaranga published. And today we're specifically looking at current and potential ways to improve forest use here in Malaysia. And we're going to continue that discussion after this quick break. Stay tuned to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the show today are Lau Yau Hua, the co-founder, co-editor, and a writer at makaranga.org, Surin Suksawan, the Southeast Asia Regional Director at ProForest, and Balu Perumal, who is the Head of Conservation at the Malaysian Nature Society. And together, we're trying to discuss ways to improve forest use here in Peninsular Malaysia in particular. So gentlemen, let's talk about aspirations now, okay? Number one, you know, what can and should we aspire to in terms of forest use in Malaysia? And secondly, and perhaps more importantly, how can we actually achieve these aspirations?
I think the last decade actually saw a change in how we govern the forest at the highest level by really creating this Ministry of Natural Resources and Environment, okay, which actually focuses not on the timber sustainability, product sustainability, but actually talks about the forest sustainability. So that was the creation of NRE, which means the whole ministry actually brought in a lot of other departments, which, you know, before that it was very, you know, scattered around with other ministries, especially like forestry department. Before this, they were under the Ministry of Primary Industry. So they are very focused on timber production. So their language, when they talk to people, is about timber sustainability. So having a forest as a production forest for timber sustainability. And then, of course, some part of the forest we have is a protection value attached to it. Even now, also, you can see the forestry department also still talking about the same thing, right? But now we have a very clear cut. Now they call it KERSA, Ministry of Energy and Natural Resources, but still, it still retain so basically the resource sustainability is of paramount importance. So this is where we can really actually talk about keeping 50% of our land area forest, natural forest cover. Before this, you cannot do that because one ministry say, I want to do this, and another ministry will say, I will take it off. Okay, so now we have that. We also have at the highest level the National Land Council, where they used to have all the Menteri Besar there and used to negotiate the quota of logging per state. It's still going on, but I can see now that there is now Nature Conservation Trust Fund, right? National Conservation Trust Fund. They've been, created so that there are funds to support research or conservation activities in the forest, all right? And recently, they also, I think about 2 years ago, during the budget announcement, they also said there is funds that can go into states who can be more responsible in protecting their green areas. So these are things that's coming up. So I can see that there is something there. And then recently, I think during MCO last year, it was the end of last year, we actually discussed about our new national forest policy. Okay, we did have national forest policy, but the previous policy only applies to Peninsular Malaysia. You cannot apply it in Sabah and Sarawak, right? So the recent development is, I think it's a bit bottom up. So they said, okay, let's come up with a forest policy for Sabah, Sarawak, and then Peninsular Malaysia. Then they merge it together to actually become the national policy. So you can see now we have a better synergy, better coordination into managing the forest, the whole forest area in Malaysia as one big element, Before this, we can't say, okay, because Peninsula has about 40% of forest left, all right? So by right, they should have 50%. Right? So now, basically, Peninsular Malaysia is actually tompang lah. It's tompang from the forest that we have in Sabah and Sarawak, you see?
Yeah.
But I think moving forward, this cannot be so. We cannot leave it as it is. We need to actually see how Peninsular Malaysia can contribute the 50% of forest bit. We cannot always depend on Sabah and Sarawak and not helping that particular states to be able to stand on their feet, basically. So this is something that we need to look at.
I think that's a very huge aspiration for Peninsular Malaysia to go from our current 43% forest cover, not forest cover, like forested land or forest land, to 50%. That's a huge aspiration. But yeah, so I guess what Balu is saying is that you're optimistic because you see signs that the management are being more synergized, more aligned together, and that there's this, there's money apparently. I wouldn't say much, for the ecological fiscal transfer that was announced in the budget, it was like 70 million. But okay, let's not go there. At least there's some money there. And then you're also saying that there's a new forestry, a national forestry policy, which it seems like you know something about it. Like I haven't heard anything like the detail about it. I guess for us on the media side, we will just wait for them to launch or give us details on what it actually is. Surin, what about you? Like, what do you think Malaysia should aspire to in terms of our forest use?
Well, I think that we should move away from a very government-centric kind of approach, right? Because there are many pitfalls when we depend too much on the government, right? The whole political upheavals in the country followed by COVID. I mean, these incidents have shown that policy decisions and government action can only bring us so far. And in previous interviews, I have touched quite a lot upon civil society's role in terms of forest conservation. And I think Balu has also dealt a lot with that. But I think the element that we have so far not dealt with much is in terms of the corporate response. And I think, interestingly, the corporate sector has somewhat come in to help fill the gap, right? Whether they're doing it in a concerted manner or through individual action. You know, we've seen some of the big corporate players, like Nestle, for example, with their initiative to
reforestation,
restore,
right?
And reforest areas, and you know, some of the companies in the palm oil sector as well, for example, have also contributed resources to this end. So I think that we can see this trend continuing in future. And in fact, even within the IUCN, the World Conservation Union, there is now quite a bit of work being done in terms of looking at other effective conservation measures or areas, right? So moving beyond the traditional approach of having protected areas. So people are starting to document the conservation areas that exist within private lands, within plantations, within community areas, and so on, right? Because if, you know, these areas will become increasingly important as our forest landscape becomes fragmented. I mean, in the past, we didn't really bother too much about a few thousand hectares here and there. But, you know, as your overall resources become scarce, then all these areas start to become more important. And some of these areas may also harbor significant biodiversity. So it's not just about total forest cover, but also importantly, what you actually find in those conservation areas. Not necessarily forests. I mean, in some cases, it might even be areas like wetlands that don't contain forests, but still harboring significant biodiversity. Yeah.
And Srin, you do a lot of work in, how supply chains can actually transform and work towards protecting nature, right? And I'm guessing that a lot of investment is needed for that. I'm thinking hundreds and billions of dollars, actually. Mm. And that's a figure, I think, that cannot be serviced by the market alone. Am I correct? I mean, you know, how can we even achieve this?
Well, I think there are different ways to look at it, right? So I'm not focusing specifically on the kind of charitable or, you know, the giving side of things, or people might call it CSR, right? Okay, here's 10 million, go and plant some trees. I mean, yes, that is happening. But I think what is more interesting is that we are seeing an increasing commitment by the corporate sector to actually internalize this sustainability approach. So, and they do it for various reasons, because they are aligning with the UN SDGs, because, they are aligning to good environment and social governance and so on, right? Or their shareholders are demanding it, or their
consumers, their clients,
consumers,
yeah. Their customers.
If they are retailers, if they are in consumer goods production, their customers are saying, we demand this. So, it's difficult to quantify that in terms of dollars and cents, right? But in some cases, people have actually made some calculations in terms of the reputational risk, right? And you may recall that you know, some years back, there was an NGO campaign against companies like Nestle, where, you know, you might recall the Kit Kat ad, you know, somebody eating a piece of Kit Kat and then it turns into a gorilla's finger. I mean, it had a huge impact on Nestle's business. And as a response to that, you know, they increased their commitment to sustainability. It probably cost them a lot of money to actually implement this long-term program, but it may still make business sense, good business sense to these companies because of the potential costs that they avoid, right? By not having to deal with reputation risk, by not having customers boycotting their product, for example. So I think that is the new paradigm that people need to get their head around. Yeah.
Balu, is there anything that you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I think as part of private ventures in this, I'm just thinking like, is the karma is now catching up with them, right? They've done so much, they have benefited so much, profited very a lot, right? But I've also, you know, left a huge footprint out there where they now have to, you know, now have to clean it up. Okay, of interest would be the plastic one now, right? You know who actually produced it and who's actually throwing it out, you know, so how to clean it up. It cannot be everybody's job, right? So we have to go back to the private investors and stuff like that. I think what's happening now is I think everybody is trying to behave responsibly. So the consumers wants to behave responsibly. So they are asking a lot of the right questions. So as a consequence, the people who are in the service or in the production level also have to move on to that. So this is now catching up with Malaysia, especially in the form of timber certification or palm oil certification. But I think we are still a very slow uptake. You know, the private companies are doing it for different reasons, you know, for easy market access, you know, to have their product and also their business recognized. So I think it's and then sometimes they also blame, they have to spend a lot in preparing for certification and so forth, but they're still selling the product at the same price. So these are things that's happening, but I think they also have to start realizing what they are doing is more than just a business for profit. They have to look at the planet, right? And also they have to look at the people as well. So I think if everybody start taking on responsibility and also the understanding, yeah, that they are not only just looking at the profit and other aspects also is going to be equally important, I think it'll be very good. You know, our world, I can see the future, lah. more optimistic future for our world. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I feel like, because we have been talking about businesses, right? In the end, I mean, they would just be profit-driven. So if the somehow trends change or there's another marketing campaigns that comes out and they do no longer feel that it's, you know, in the interest of profit to use certified or certification, you know, from FSC or is it like, you know, MTCC, then they'll probably, you know, I mean, I hope they don't change, but they likely will, right? But can we also talk about, you know, in the Forest Files series, you know, both of you have given quite a few, I guess, recommendations or potential solutions, not just from, you know, from the corporate, but also in terms of the governance, which we did touch a bit on. But can we, you know, talk about what do you think about, say, like, public participation? The role of the rakyat in this, in really improving forest use in Malaysia. You know, we have talked about the governments, and if you talk about the corporate, now what about the people?
Yeah, I think, as I alluded to earlier, I mean, the people's expectations have changed over the years, and I think there's a lot of people calling for greater participation in forest governance, especially when it comes to deforestation, the extinction of forests from our protected areas or forest reserves. And as we know, Selangor is the only state in Peninsular Malaysia now that actually allows for public participation before a forest reserve area is excised. And every time that they've done a public participation exercise, and I think we have seen three in total so far, they've all been oversubscribed, I would say. I think that the response from the people have been tremendous in terms of wanting to have their say, people standing up saying, no, we don't want this area to be excised. So, which is good, but in a way, it also has a negative impact, because as we can see from the recent National Land Council decision, because the states need to have a collective decision within the National Land Council. They don't like have selective kind of implementation. It's an all or nothing kind of thing. All of the Menteri Besar and chief ministers have to sign on, you know, come on board on a certain policy, and then the government, the federal government, can announce that, okay, we have achieved consensus on this, and this is the new kind of way forward, right? So there was a proposal within the National Forest Policy and also the National Forestry Act, which is due to be revised for Peninsula Malaysia, that there should be public participation before accession. But it didn't go through. And I believe it's because the state governments have watched closely what happened in Selangor, and they decided that we don't want to deal with this kind of thing. We like the old way of being able to excise forested areas without having to worry about explaining why and how and all that to the public.
Well, we did talk about this in the episode with Adrian Yeo, yeah, about this. But just to point out here, it's kind of, you know, what's funny, I guess, if that's the correct word to use, is that this same proposal actually was approved by the National Land Council last year, right? Mm. So, I mean, how many Menteri Besars have changed since then, right?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Because it's a very fluid,
yeah,
kind of situation that we have.
Yes.
And we can, the National Land Council, I believe, meets something like once a year, right? So they can always overturn whatever decision they made in the past. So that means that depending on the National Land Council alone may not be good enough, right? So we need a better way of setting the long-term policy. And of course, the National Forest Policy is an attempt to do that. So interestingly, the only thing that has actually remained in the agenda is the 50% forest cover pledge that was made by Tun Mahathir at that time, and he was the Prime Minister in 1992. And that's the only thing that actually still sticks in everyone's mind, even though it's not actually reflected in any of our official policy. It's not a law. It's not an official policy, but everybody remembers that. Everybody thinks, yes, 50% forest cover, that's what we should maintain. But if the policy responds and the implementation doesn't follow suit, we can expect that we will fall below that target because we have not been good enough in terms of making sure that it happens.
So I guess for now, with the National Land Council's rejection of this public consultation requirement, I guess for the near future, we won't be seeing that implemented in other states outside of Selangor. Other than that, you know, other than public consultation, you know, are there other ways that, you know, the people can contribute to improving forest use in, or let's limit it to Peninsula Malaysia? I mean, Balu, do you have any ideas?
Okay, maybe there is one fact I think people didn't look into when they come to this kind of conclusion. That's why I said when we do make any decision, it has to be backed by facts, right? The fact says in Malaysia, for instance, right, there are not only people living outside of the forest. They assume nobody live in the forest. So they come up with the fact, you know, so we don't need anybody to say anything, you know, because whatever we are doing in the forest doesn't affect anybody. Okay, everybody is living outside. That is not true. If you look at the population in Sabah and Sarawak, it's very clear they have a right on the land that they sit or they live. And over there, most of the population are all rural population. They live in the forest practically. All right. My wife comes from Sarawak. She's an Iban. Yeah? When she says to me, jom masuk kampung, it's the forest. It's not, you know, kampung like here. I don't go into the forest. So this is where you can see. So we have close to 3 to 4 million people living in the forest. Mm. So when you say they don't have a voice, I mean, it's ridiculous. Because whatever you're going to do, any activity you're going to do in the forest will impact them first. Not to mention us outside, living outside, you know. We are dependent on the forest for many ecosystem services.
Yeah.
All right? Our clean and fresh water. It's proven. It's proven that forests, having forests, will actually ensure a regular and consistent supply. Okay, you can see a lot of the states, smaller states, Negeri Sembilan, Malacca, Penang, they are actually now water scarce. state already, you know, so they are going to face a lot of problem in terms of water. Selangor is experiencing it because their forest area is only about 30%. That's all. Not even the national peninsula Malaysia 40%. So whether you like it or not, we are going to be impacted through whatever forest management or governance that we are choosing. So these are the facts. So for a national land council to say yes a year ago or 2 years ago, now they're coming back and say no, this is political. This is not backed by any data. So this is what I'm saying. We are taking one step forward as if to show, we are doing things, you know, we have a good governance system, but you are taking two steps back, say, sorry, you know, you don't have any voice. Yeah. So I think this is something that we cannot accept, not in this communication world. No, we are in the communication world now, all right? So I think the government of the day have to look into it carefully, all right? You are not doing it for the forest. You are doing it for the people. Please, we have 3-4 million people living in the forest. And of course, I'm sure, you know, 80% of us in the urban area are also dependent on this forest services. So we can't do that. Yeah, so I hope they will have another meeting next year, yeah, and overthrow and make a more concrete, constructive way forward.
All right. So it sounds like for us, Rakyat, whether we are living in Kampung Baru KL or living in some real rural Kampung. I mean, so I guess for now, we really need to know can I say that we need to know our rights, our demands, and yes, we just keep on pushing for it, right? We have to make ourselves heard. I mean, if you truly believe that you enjoy the forest, you need the forest, then somehow you need to get your voice out there heard that this is what the people want, right?
If I may kind of just add another perspective to this turn of thinking, you know, because yes, we do want greater public participation in forest governance. And it's not all about the negative side of things, you know,
yeah,
that forest is going to be cleared, people need to demand their rights, save the forest before it's lost, all that. Yes, all that need to happen, right? But there should also be a proactive aspect to it, you know, or you might even say forest positive aspect to it, whereby, you know, can we rethink the way that we are managing our forest resources currently and move beyond a very kind of timber-centric approach to forest management? So the way that it works now is that where the state governments are concerned, they look at the forest as a source of timber. As long as they can log the area and extract the timber and get revenue, they will continue to do so. And they may log an area once, twice, and after a certain period of time when the forest, the timber resources, the timber stocks have dropped below the threshold of being a commercially viable venture, then they think about forest conversion, right? Because they think, there's no good timber left, let's convert the forest and turn it into a plantation, or let's mine the area or put in a housing area, whatever.
A forest plantation, right? They might.
Yeah, forest plantation, whatever, right? Because they are timber-centric. But, you know, if people who are familiar with the forest, even when the big timber trees are gone, the forest is still available for many, many other things, whether it is for ecosystem services or non-timber forest products, you know, that the local communities can use. So what, you know, should be the way forward is for the government, the state governments, to work together with the local community. And if the local community are using the forest resources, how can they come up with, for lack of a better phrase to use, a win-win situation, right? It's whereby the community can extract certain resources in a sustainable manner from the forest, the state governments can gain some revenue, right, from licensing of this extraction of the products from the forest. This used to be the way it was done, actually, a long time ago, before we had colonialism, when we had the sultanates, you know, in Peninsula Malaysia. Actually, that was a major revenue for the sultans, for the state governments of the day, where, you know, people were paying taxes to get Dhamma, to get, you know, Gaharu, to extract Ratan and all kinds of things. And they were taxed for that. But, you know, they get some profit. They provide some taxes to the state government. But when commercial forestry came into the picture, basically, you know, people forgot about all these other products and they just look at the timber. And if it is not timber, then they're not interested because the revenue is not much. But I can assure you, as the timber stocks are depleted, then you have no choice. But you have to look at other forms of revenue from the state, from the forest. And you need to put emphasis on these other non-timber revenues because otherwise the forest will be seen as of no value and that's where conversion happens. Yep. So we need to reset the thinking there.
You know, we are running out of time, but, you know, just one very interesting point I discovered as I was going through the forestry data that relates to what Surin was saying about non-timber forest products, right? You know, Selangor, we know, has, you know, there's not much forest left in Selangor. About, you know, 30 slightly above 30% of the land in Selangor is still forested. And so the Selangor Forestry Department actually gets not much money from timber royalty. But last year, I mean, not last year, I mean 2019, Selangor actually obtained 36 million in royalty from non-timber forest product. Hmm. I have no idea what that is, but they got 36 million, like, it's way more than what they got for timber. They only got 28,000 from timber. And they got 36 million from non-timber forest product. I'm not sure what that was, but I guess it shows some potential in the amount of revenue that they could get, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's truly Damaro, I'm not sure. I really have no idea what it was, and I couldn't find it, yeah.
Any ideas, Balu?
I got a lot of ideas.
Yeah, but actually, we are running out of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Any last takeaways that you'd like to leave us with?
I think we have to, like what I said, I think the responsibility of managing the forest and its protection, I think should be everyone's. It shouldn't be very government-centric, all right? It provides a lot of resources, and also I think is the life of our country, basically, right? When you look into the various ecosystem services that it provides, right? So the forest as a resource, and it's getting lesser and lesser, I would think it becomes much, much more valuable. Mm. So now, when there's not so much option, even for the companies, yeah, they want to lock, they can't even get areas to lock, okay? So now everybody is fighting each other. So I think this is a time for us, you know, to look at our policy and also our law, strengthen it for everybody's involvement, right? Because everybody has to be responsible. So in that sense, it also will be the cornerstone for our future economic development. So we have to be fair. Yeah, to certain states, if they are depending a lot on the natural resources, so we need to compensate, right? So I hear that the issue about water catchment and who's going to pay for the water in Kedah and Penang is ridiculous. Yeah, you want to take water for free, you don't want to pay. Oh, I can do that. But it's called churi, yeah? It's stealing. We can do that. You have to take responsibility, you know, because the water comes from only one place. All right, so you have to acknowledge that. So I think everybody has to play their part. We have to start looking about leading the world in the forest management. Okay, we have dropped out. Okay, along the way. So I think we now have to play catch up. Okay, and nowadays with information technology, you don't need to be in our country to know which area has been locked, right? So it's like that. So it's now becoming very transparent. Even if you want to hide anything, also you cannot hide. Okay, so I think we have to embrace this new technology, this era of new technology, be more transparent, get everybody participatory, and we do based on, I said, the best available data. Okay, the data is there, right? So I think we have to do that. Like Surin said, we still have 50% or more, a little bit, of the forest, natural cover forest, right? So I think we can work. The government actually launched the 100 million tree planting. So they can't do it themselves, you know. Right? And I don't think it has to be a political gimmick, all right? Yeah? Let's all work together, you know. If we start doing it, I think our country will be much blessed. And we'll be rich. We are already rich, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of biodiversity.
Sirin?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things running through my mind now. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be done, but maybe I'll just focus on a couple of things and also, you know, just following from Balu's lead there. I mean, the use of technology, I agree fully. One of the decisions made, and probably one of the more positive decisions made in the recent National Land Council deliberations is that they're going to use satellite technology to monitor forests. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, sounds great, but you know, just to point out that as far back as 2006, I was looking at some old articles. In 2006, our then Deputy Prime Minister declared that we will be monitoring forests using satellite. I mean, almost the exact kind of wording being used. And that was 14 years ago. Have we actually seen any outputs from the forest monitoring done by the government? The answer is no, because nobody has access to that. If it is being done at all, right? And interestingly, I mean, because technology is now available for people, there are already many initiatives to monitor forest cover, whether within Malaysia or externally. I mean, and going back again to the corporate sector is monitoring the forest cover in the plantation areas of their suppliers. That's what's happening now. You know, companies, the big buyers of palm oil, for example, they are monitoring whether the plantation area in you know, within their supply base is maintaining the forest cover or not. Because under certain obligations, RSPO and so on, you have to maintain the conservation areas within their plantation. And they are actually actively monitoring that to make sure that the forest cover there is not lost, because then they risk losing their certified volumes of palm oil. Mm. That's happening. The civil society is monitoring what's happening on the ground through the satellite imagery as well. And we can see in the case of the coastal forest in Perak, the environmental activists there are actually monitoring. They can see what's happening, and then they can report the cases to the forestry department, who seem to be unaware of what's happening. So why is that the case? Shouldn't it be the government that is taking the lead, actually actively monitoring the resources that they are supposed to manage on our behalf using taxpayers' money? So that's the use of technology. And I think probably I have only time for one last point. I like to say, why don't we get the technocrats, the thinkers, into the policy-making space within the government. I mean, we have now, for example, our finance minister, he's from the corporate sector, he used to be an ex-banker, he's a finance minister. Why can't we get a technocrat, somebody who actually knows what forest governance, or somebody who's actually familiar about forests in general, to be the natural resource minister? So I don't think that is a big ask. I think that is only to be expected. We are one of the few tropical countries that have substantial forest cover left that is at the brink of being a developed country. We should be at the forefront of forest management, as Balu has said. So these are the two top things on my agenda.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for sharing your thoughts today. I've been speaking to Balu Perumal, the head of conservation at the Malaysian Nature Society, Surin Suksuan, the Southeast Asia Regional Director at ProForest, and Lau Yau Hua, the co-founder, co-editor and writer at makaranga.org. And we were looking at ways to improve forest use here in Peninsula Malaysia. And this was the final in a three-part series covering Makaranga's Forest File series. And if you have missed any part of today's show, or you know, either of those two interviews that we aired before, you can search for the podcast at bfm.my/earth. You can find it on the BFM app, and you can find it you know, wherever you get your podcasts from: Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and the like. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.